Hello and welcome to Studio Sessions, the big red and shiny podcast where we talk with artists about the ideas, inspiration, and processes that go into their work. I'm your host Matt Kuhlman, and this episode I'll be talking with Letha Wilson. Letha earned her BFA in painting from Syracuse University in 1998, and her MFA in combined media from Hunter College in New York in 2003. Often using nature photography as a starting point, she includes sculptural elements that move them beyond simply being photographs. In earlier efforts, this was done by either folding or cutting and collaging the image, and in more recent works involves constructing actual forms that incorporate the image onto the surface. Join me as Letha discusses her interest in the nature scenes she uses, and how she decides to display them in such innovative ways. Hi, Letha. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are
Thanks
you?
Thanks for meeting with me here in your studio. Talking just a minute ago, you mentioned that you were from Colorado. Is that where you're originally from?
Well, I was born in Honolulu, but we moved to Colorado when I was four, so I don't really remember Honolulu.
Mm.
But grew up in Colorado in Greeley,
mm-hmm.
just like on the plains.
Like the eastern
Yeah, on plains. The eastern plains. It's like an hour northeast of Denver.
Okay.
But there's a University of Northern Colorado there, so it was not totally boring.
Mm.
It's actually a nice place to grow up. But we would spend a lot of time in the mountains, too. We had a little cabin on the way to Estes Park, and all of our vacations were within the state, backpacking, fishing.
Mm.
My dad's really into outdoors activities. But nothing with, like, we never went skiing. There's never activities involving a lot of other people. It's just, like, us in the wilderness, so...
Yeah. That seems to reflect in your work, where there's just a lot of nature scenes where it seems like you spend a lot of time out walking around still.
It's definitely all kind of rooted in that. As much as I, at the time, probably didn't really enjoy that. Like, I always complained about going on the week-long backpack trips every summer.
Yeah.
It's kind of intense, but...
I did it first, too, but then I learned that I really liked them, so...
Yeah. I think more like in retrospect. And then I went to college at Syracuse. So basically I moved away from Colorado when I was 18 and went to Syracuse and have been in New York State ever since. Moved to New York City after that. So I think, you know, kind of thinking back to Colorado there. But my family still lives there, so I go there. Try to go there twice a year for a few weeks at least.
And did you start out doing photographs out in wilderness pretty early on, or was that something you came back to, like, after the family vacation aspect of it?
They were more like vacation photographs. Actually, my dad would, our whole family would kind of have little cameras, and every summer my dad would pick out the best photo that he had taken and have it framed in our house somewhere. So when I went to college, I had just, like, little, you know, snapshots that I would look at or refer to, and then eventually, even in undergrad, though, they were making their way into my work, but as, like, a lot, not the actual photographs, but photocopies of them or transfers of them or some image of them. So, from fairly early on, but I definitely never, almost even today, don't consider myself a photographer, I don't know. I was a painting major in undergrad, and I took photography classes at Syracuse, learned how to, you know, black and white and color, learned how to print, took printmaking, took sculpture, took all the classes I could and everything else. But
Were you thematically focused on the wilderness in your non-photography work before you started drawing it in?
I think in undergrad it was definitely kind of experimenting with different mediums, and I was always drawn to combining 2D and 3D and always interested in, like, mixed media. But as far as my subject matter, the content, I think it was still, like, you know, do some feminist work, do some text work, do some, you know, it was a little bit more trying things out. But by my last year of undergrad, the theme or using images from Colorado had started entering into my work, and even as photo images. And it was, but even in grad school, the first part of grad school, I spent kind of making these architectural spaces, and I was really interested in making these environments people go into. But and then the photographs were like on the side. So it really wasn't until my senior year and grad, my last year of grad school, that I made my first photo sculpture. That was really like this moment where I combined these two things, and that for me that was exciting because I'd already been working with photographs kind of all along on the side and kind of a small scale, and this was the first time I made them like at the same scale of importance as a sculpture, and made that decision.
What kind of environments were you trying to create that people could go into that you were talking about?
They were kind of like generic architectures. I mean, I think when I first, at the beginning of grad school, I mean, as a viewer of artworks, I've always been the most, I've always enjoyed sculpture the most. It's, to me, it's like the works in a show. I always like gravitate towards the sculptural works, and, I don't know, this series that I did in the beginning of grad school, again, I think it was just kind of trying something out. I just learned how to build walls, and I was, to me, like, building a whole room by myself is kind of exciting.
Yeah.
Like, and then, but the actual pieces I built were really kind of simple, minimal, almost like a waiting room or like an in-between room or these liminal spaces, so that weren't really descript and kind of anonymous, but it was kind of this idea of creating an environment in the space and the viewer's experience in that, which I was interested in. I don't even think they were successful, but I do think one piece I did that I think was nice was called Scenic Overlook, and I built this basically an overlook in my studio, because they're in Hunter and they're subdivided Clinique studios, so you climb up to the top and then you realize there's all these other studios and you're in one big room. Sort of something about changing your perspective physically and how that can alter things, but it was also a take on the landscape of the architecture or something. So,
as far as being interested in sculpture, are there people who do similar things to what you're doing now with your kind of combining sculptural elements with photography? Because I think it's pretty unique. It's like a direction that I haven't seen anyone pursue so from so many different angles, I guess, with photography. Because I've talked to a lot of photographers that are using the medium in very different inventive ways other than just taking pictures. And I was just kind of curious how you kind of came up with your method of working, I suppose.
I think actually one thing is because I was a painting major and really didn't even, you know, my relationship to photography has always been kind of using it to do what I need to do, but not really tied down to a lot of conventions. Like, it seems that people that are actually trained as photographers and go to school as photographers have just there's a lot of rules, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, how is a photograph presented? How is it taken? How is it mounted? How is it, when I was at Bemis and I was printing at the community college there, and they had like a darkroom facility and all these classes, the students were spending 50% of their time trying to cut the map board into like the perfect square, and I was just like, who cares? this doesn't matter. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So I've always this sort of strange like fixation on these kind of, I don't know, for me that's really not interesting. And the darkroom color correcting or spot check, all that stuff, like, isn't interesting to me. The sort of perfect print. I actually go to the other thing is, this was maybe 5 years ago, I started, this is kind of two different things, but I started printing in the dark room instead of doing digital prints, because it, for me, made it less precious and more immediate, the process, so I can rent time in the dark room and just print a whole lot of prints, and then come back and have it, and then if I cut it or screw it up, doesn't matter, I'll just print it again. So something about that it's actually more immediate to me than a digital print, where you have to scan it, send it to someone, color correct it, get it back, and it costs less money. Like,
interesting.
So in a way it's interesting that I'm kind of going back, and like I use this really old, the camera I use is like an old camera that some, you know, friend gave me, and I don't think I've ever bought a camera. I mean, but it seems like in photography, like when I talk to students in photography, they're like trying to save up to buy the next best camera.
Yeah.
Spend a lot of time and energy on the equipment or the technology. And I mean, it's really, you know, I'm not against digital, and I use some of the works, I use digital photography, but it's more like when it works for the work.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, sometimes it just complicates things when you have to worry about hard drive space and XMPing stuff and blah, 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 you know?
So you're more into photography for the image, not the craft.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like trying to get the image out as quickly as, like, it's like this immediacy to producing this image. But then that image isn't enough. So then what? And I think, you know, early on, one thing I was struck at, you know, years ago was, like, in, you know, the gallery listings, photography was separate than the other galleries. I always thought that was strange. I just thought, why? I mean, this is still, you know, I guess the newness of the medium in relation to other mediums historically, like, it still hasn't, still considered separate, which I always thought was strange. So to me, there's a lot of area there to be explored. Like, if you don't assume this about the photograph, then what? And then it opens a lot of things up. And I think because my background is, like, very material-based and how to build stuff or working on things, like, maybe my approach is more open to the photograph. And then I'm, like, really, like, pushing it. I mean, but the push of the photograph has also taken me many years to... I mean, it's something that can seem very simple, maybe, like, I've been working on for, like, 10 years. So, I mean, in the spirit of, like, figuring out ideas, so...
Do you want to talk more specifically about what you're doing in some of these photographs here, like what kind of additions you're making or how you present your images? And I was curious, are they all from Colorado? Because they're all very different. Like, there's some, like, desert scapes, it looks like, and some in the woods. I know that Colorado has that mix, but are they all specifically just from that state?
No, they, no. I mean, there's a... I definitely... They're from basically wherever I go, and wherever I go anywhere on a residency. I mean, I've done several residencies that allow me access to places, which is great. So whenever I, whenever I travel, I'll take photographs, most usually. But, like, when I did the residency at Skowhegan in Maine, which is, like, a very, you know, forest landscape, it was great. And that was a great, to me, that summer was really interesting, because it changed the way I thought about photography or taking photographs. Because before then, I think I was really interested in the vista and the Western landscape and this sort of, you know, scene. But because when I was at Skowhegan, there's 9 weeks, and my studio is right at the edge of the forest, and I actually had a lot of time to, like, take walks, you know, every day or every other day. And then I started taking different kinds of photographs, because you don't have the vista, you're enclosed, and then it was more detailed shots, or like two trees, or, you know, a pile of rocks or something, and kind of like I started noticing things more, because I was actually spending more time in one place. Because usually I'm sort of traveling through quickly, and this photograph is like trying to capture something, because you're never coming back, maybe, you know, that's sort of like,
so you're going through quickly, you just kind of see the big grand landscape, you know, like,
yeah,
take
and
that
this,
image, but
this kind of you know,
slowing down allowed you to zoom in more on specific things that were there.
Yeah, to actually spend the time and slow down, which I don't really even get. I mean, I like to try. I hope I learned from that. But it also, when I thought about it, it was like, oh, I just felt like the world kind of opened up. I was like, I can go anywhere and shoot anything. Like, it's just about how I look at it, or I'm, you know, spending a little time there. So that was good. I mean, that was a nice, like, awareness. But also the other thing I kind of thought there, or when I was like traveling in Maine, was that I do really, there is something specific about like the Western landscape and, you know, Utah and Colorado and stuff that is just really magical, you know, I do think. And this sort of sense of being in the frontier, and then no one has been here in this spot, or it is kind of magical. So, like, it is one of my favorite places to go. And then the last couple summers, so now, like, every summer I try to plan kind of a major trip to a place, like, Grand Tetons was a couple, two summers ago, then the Badlands last year, and then this past year I went back to Utah and spent some time there, which is like amazing. So, because when I was actually growing up, we never went to Utah,
yeah.
even though it was so close, or Wyoming. So, I kind of use Colorado as the base point, but then try to hit as many places I can. I go with my parents, actually. We go camping, the three of us. So
yeah.
That's always fun.
Just go hike the length of the Great Divide and just take photos the whole way. That'd take a few months. But.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny because my dad is, he really does not like the quintessential, you know, he doesn't like the like, I wanted to go to the Grand Tetons. Why do you want to go there? There's too many people there. That's, you know, he wants to go off the side of the road and find little places. So we kind of are a nice, it's a nice combination to travel with him because I will force him to go to the national monuments, but then we'll find other things that aren't, and kind of both are interesting to me, I think.
Yeah, I haven't been to a lot of the big national parks, but I can imagine that it is kind of like overrun. It's not exactly what you think because you see like the Ansel Adams picture and you're like, oh,
yes,
it's big wide open spaces, but then you go there and I don't know what the experience would be like if there's like a couple dozen people like within earshot of you or something, you know?
Right.
Or someplace like the Grand Canyon where it's just like swarming, everybody's swarming around the rim.
Yeah, I mean, it's, there's definitely those places and those spots, but it's really, it's really not hard to kind of find, like, go like 5 minutes away and find some place.
Yeah.
Even in Utah, where I was last summer, Bryce Canyon, and there was a point where, yes, it was too overrun to do anything, but if you go a little bit early, if you go in the morning, if you go in a different time of year, or if you go on another trail, like, there'll be no one there. So it's funny. People just go. They all go to the same place.
Yeah.
But you could go there and go a little bit of ways and kind of still find something great. So I really like, I mean, those trips are like, part of my process, really.
I noticed that there's, like, a lot of kind of geometry-based additions to the photos. What's your kind of thought process or decision-making process and what kind of, how you manipulate a photo? Like, in this one up here, you have a circle cut out and then there's an addition of, like, a red portion to the circle behind the tree branch there. That's
yeah.
The trunk.
And that's a single, one single piece, so it's a double-sided print.
Okay.
This is actually one of the first, like, digital edition, or I work with a printer in Minnesota to do this. But the original was painted, so it's two sides. I mean, this is actually something I think about a lot, is like the back and the front of an image. So I've done pieces where I've mounted an image on both sides, or sometimes I paint or have a color on one side. And this is just one cut, and it's folded, and then a slot, and it's folded back into itself, so it ends up becoming the circle, but it's almost like a flag. And you know, I mean, the thing about the geometry, I think when I'm taking photographs, I think when I see something that has a kind of geometry or reason, and maybe that's our human eye trying to, you know, prescribe some sort of reason onto nature. Like, if I see two trees that have fallen, they happen to be parallel to each other, I'm drawn to that, or I'll take that photograph. So I think kind of finding these, you know, moments in nature where you can read your own geometry into it. I mean, but also thinking about this, you know, the numbers behind everything, or if there is this science, or if there is this, like, way of figuring things out that's sort of the baseline. But then the image and the actuality is so, like, real and non, you know, describable or non, you know, non-geometric, that it's this, like, attempt to kind of hold on to it or rein it in or create this sort of balance. And I think a lot of the work is creating a balance that is not just, you know, pro-nature, anti, you know, human or architecture, but sort of, like, this very precarious balance between these things. Not a hierarchy, but relationship, like creating a relationship between these forms and these sort of, yes, like definitely reoccurring things like the circle, the triangle, the line that come up in the work.
Do you find that people try to read like a pro or con take on nature or human intervention in the work? Because it's kind of like something that people are trying to do, I think, but
right. I think in the, you know, sometimes people ask me about, like, environmentalism, or they read it as a pro, which doesn't bother me at all. I mean, it's just that that's not my overt, you know, I mean, I think that my interest in the place and, you know, nature is not just, like, an idea, but a literal thing is very real, and if looking at that as a viewer makes them think twice about it or our relationship to nature, then that's great, you know?
Mm.
I mean, in my life, it's like they're very separate kind of arenas, but maybe like the image, bringing it here, it enters our dialogue. I mean, it seems like in New York, there's so many images of the city around. I don't know, like, there's more out there than New York City when you're here, but you wouldn't know it, so.
Yeah. And what are some of the different ways that you've manipulated the images? Like, some of them, it's from the photos that I saw, it was kind of hard to tell exactly what was going on. Like, I remember there was a one with a bunch of like holes cut in it, and it looked like light was shining through the back.
Right.
Is that what was happening?
That was a site specific piece. There was a show in Philly at Vox Populi about 2 years ago, and in the gallery, it had a wall that was built over behind a window, but you wouldn't know it because it was just the drywall. And so, I mean, I've worked with drywall a lot, and not just know it. Like, I built walls for galleries for many years, and like worked as a art. I mean, I worked at a gallery for many years too. So, my knowledge and like, I mean, to me, drywall is like just a really natural. Like, I can work with it really well. I can build a wall and very comfortable with it. So, cutting a hole in the drywall or what's behind the wall is always something I've. In several pieces, I've done that. But for that piece, there's a photograph that has kind of like half holes cut out of it, and there's paint on the back of the photograph. It's actually mounted with paper. So they flip over, almost like an advent calendar, and you see a little bit of the yellow. But then the wall it's on, there's a window behind it, and so I cut the same holes out of the wall. So the light coming through is coming from outside.
Okay.
So it comes through both the wall and the gallery. And something kind of simple, but A, you're looking at it and you don't realize. You see a wall and you never think, oh, there's a window behind this.
Yeah, that's what I was confused by, because I couldn't see a window. It just looked like it was put on the wall.
Right.
I was like, where's the light coming from?
And that's the thing, is once someone builds a wall in the space, you just look at the wall and you assume, oh, this is a wall. And like, you don't usually think about the things that's behind it. It's meant to sort of cover that all up nicely. So this was just like a very simple thing, but it was interesting because like I thought the piece would only work during the day or a certain light, but actually, you know, it's viewing into a parking lot but the draft from the window when you're like staying in front of the piece, you can like feel the air from outside. Like, it's so weird. And then even at dusk, the color of the sky got to this really interesting blue. And then that would like set off with the photograph red, and then during the day it would actually like shine sunshine onto the gallery floor, little spots. So that was really cool, but I really didn't know what it was going to be like until I made it. So it was an idea, and I did some tests in my studio with the cutting and all that stuff, but only when I built it in the actual gallery. So that was kind of exciting for me.
And as far as working with drywall and constructing walls, like you said, you did some pieces that like built walls on trees, like out in nature, right?
Yeah.
How is that? Like trying to build a wall around all those branches, because
it's
very visually striking.
There's a lot of mosquitoes. I built that in the first piece of that I built was at Skowhegan again. And some of the work earlier, I mean, like, the work I'm doing that's, like, really specifically photography and sculpture, I've really only kind of specifically concentrated on that, I'd say, in the past, like, you know, 4 years or something. And before that, I mean, I was still doing those pieces, but I was also working a whole series of video pieces I had, and also these pieces where I was using reclaimed drywall to build sculptures outside. So those pieces were also questioning that, you know, our perception of that material, drywall, and what it can do, and also what happens when it is outside for 10 months. And those were all quite, like, to me, interesting pieces. And using walls that were discarded from galleries, so they have this history. So that the piece I did in the tree was actually the first. I don't know. It was the first piece where it didn't matter where the drywall came from. It wasn't really about like the source material of the drywall.
Mm-hmm.
And in some strange way, like I was thinking. I mean, I was originally thinking of the trees of the branches of the tree. In that juncture where they meet the wall and then breaking through.
Mm-hmm.
And almost even thinking of it as like a drawing. So I had that idea, and I had had like in the sort of back of my mind for years, but when I was there, I was like, what if I, you know, built this wall? And I just approach it as I would like build a wall in a gallery with like pipes coming through it.
Mm-hmm.
So like the actually building it was, you know, fairly straightforward. I mean, I had like one person help me just hoist the whole thing up there, and then for the one at Scout Weekend. The rest I just made by myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you probably just built like big lattice and then like kind of put smaller chunks around everything.
Yeah, it's 2x4s and framed out and hanging in the tree, and then I just pieced the drywall around it, mudded it, painted it just like you would an interior wall.
Mm-hmm.
And then the interesting thing was that, well, first of all, it totally set off the tree. And then the light did something even more. I hadn't even thought about what the sunlight would do, and then all of a sudden it was like, it would change with the, you know, time of day. It would change with like the light conditions or the weather conditions, and it was like crazy, but very dramatic.
Were they meant to be long term installations? Like, are they still there?
Well, I thought it was actually going to stay there, but because I was told that usually they don't take down sculptures in the outskirts of the Scout Vegan grounds. But when I went the next summer to look at it, it was gone.
Yeah.
So they had torn it down. But I, yeah, because I was kind of curious to see what it would look like. I did a piece after that was in Chicago, outside of Chicago, inside an arboretum. So in like that was twice as big, 16x20 or something, for a show that was up for 6 months. And that was even like, you know, that I rented a scaffold and I had help, and you know, I did the whole thing. That was actually in a deciduous tree. That changed over time. It started out with no leaves and then leafed out completely and covered up the wall. So
yeah,
that was a really cool piece. I wasn't sure how people would respond to it because it's in this sort of public park and a non-art park at that, but
yeah,
it was kind of, I was really like, what people's response and like how they read it was pretty great.
Yeah,
for me.
I guess if you left it there long enough, the tree would just like tear the wall apart because the branches would break it, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, actually, it wasn't. There was not a single screw in the tree. It was sitting on the ground and built around. And it, aside from the paint kind of peeling off, that was really the only thing that happened. I mean, it gets wet and then it gets dry. The wind comes through it, so it's open. They think like drywall is just gonna like crumble apart, like, you know.
Yeah.
But it's, if it's sitting in water, it will.
Yeah. So you're mentioning that was made out of old gallery walls, and I saw you had some other pieces that used like reclaimed materials. And those, like, there was one that was a fountain that was built out of some gallery. When you're using the reclaimed materials, you said in that one that it wasn't important that it was reclaimed, but in any of the other ones, like, is there like a purpose to using the recycled materials other than?
I mean, I think the original, you know, impetus for the series was thinking of, you know, and having worked in a gallery for so long, and like every new show they would just build new walls and build new spaces and then at the end just throw it out. And aside from being wasteful, it's also kind of interesting because there's so much importance put on these pristine walls, but they're really just throwaway. And kind of that thing we were talking about where you see a wall and you assume it's permanent, you assume it's there. And I don't know, I like the idea that the cultural value of the wall. I mean, depending on the gallery, if it's a wall inside Gagosian's, you know, you're not going to touch it. You know, this is a wall people would kill to have their work shown on or something. You know, like this value of the gallery wall, not just as material, it's nothing, but as a signifier, it's important. So actually the piece I did at Socrates, there was a show, a Jasper John show at Matthew Marks Gallery, and my friend works there, and so when this show came down, I got all the walls from it.
Cool.
So it's this idea of, like, these are the walls that hung the Jasper John show,
mm-hmm.
and now they're in outside in a park, and, like, you know, I just cut them all up to make a mm-hmm. planter.
Oh, yeah, I saw that one's in the park
Socrates.
Up above. Okay.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, in those original pieces, it was kind of that idea of flipping the gallery inside out, and the first piece is actually a lean-to, so the walls were out on the outside of the structure where the gallery walls, and the inside was just like wood from the gallery and like the front desk and stuff. So,
mm-hmm. interesting. What were some of the other reclaimed things that you made? Because I saw the fountain, that was like a pretty big fountain that looked like it was like 6 foot high, right?
Yeah, that was after. It was the first one was a lean to outside, the second one was a garden. The third one was the fountain. And then I started a series where I was making a high-end object out of it instead of, like, of pushing the material by seeing how it could hold up to nature. I made, a designer lamp out of it to see if I could push the material to, like, this high-end thing. And so I just, as a project, I made this artichoke lamp out of drywall. And then, which was interesting and nice and kind of tried to figure it out as a problem to solve, but... then I was invited to do a show inside like an old hospital, and so I cut all the holes out of the wall and made the lamp so you could see the relationship directly between the lamp made from the walls and then the walls and the holes. So I think that was like a more successful kind of iteration of that idea, but
I guess there's like a lot of direct crossover between the kind of geometry being imposed on an environment in that situation and also the geometry that you visually impose on the landscapes that you're photographing too.
Yeah, and I think the wall, really the last piece I did with drywall, which is the wall in tree pieces, somehow creates then a bridge to the photographs. And then the piece I did at Bemis last year was, it also I felt related to the tree wall piece, which was this giant photograph of the column of the gallery going through it.
Yeah, I saw that one.
And to me, that was like kind of the logical next step. And then the image is the wall, and the gallery architecture is bisecting it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, it's like the column is a giant piece of wood, and then the image is this tree and the shadow, and then the shadow from the image, and then the shadow in the gallery. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know, that was like a really.
Yeah, it's kind of with that slant, the picture of the tree is kind of the shadow of the column that was made out of a tree at one point.
Yeah, and the column is straight and the image is sort of falling away.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool for me to be able to do that. So, yeah, so I think like scale, and that's the nice thing about also photography is like scale could change. Because it's like scalable, you know?
Yeah.
Depending on the idea or the piece.
So, in some of your current or future projects, what kind of things are you working towards in newer works?
Well, actually, one thing we haven't really talked about is concrete, which I've been really into for the past 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
The whole series, actually, that I've been working on lately was, you know, thinking of materials and drywall and... a material I had in the back of my mind to work with was concrete. So I started, I'd say 2.5 years ago, the first piece incorporating concrete as an element, a sculptural element, with the photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of, you know, line of, I guess, research or ideas has kind of culminated to then, like, figuring out a way for that you can actually pour the concrete onto the photograph and transfer the emulsion onto the concrete. So
mm-hmm.
then the image is embedded into the concrete, and concrete as ultimately, you know, rock and natural material, but that's like an urban signifier.
Yeah.
And has its own kind of magical qualities, like just like that, to me, photography does. So
mm-hmm.
that's been kind of this road I've been going down, like pushing it as a material, concrete.
Mm. Are you making like sculptural forms out of the concrete, or just kind of embedding it into an environment, like a slab, like a sidewalk or something?
They're wall pieces. I mean, the pieces here, these are all concrete.
Okay.
photograph with concrete poured onto it to make its shape, or sometimes the photograph is the mold or the holder that creates the form that then the concrete is poured into.
I did see these pieces. Now I thought they were wood though, because they're wall hanging.
Yeah, and then, well, I use wood as then in the mold, and then in those two pieces as like the stop, so you see the grain, the wood grain.
Mm-hmm.
So it picks up the, but the image is just a literally transferred just from the process of curing the concrete onto it. So it's kind of something, I mean I'm still refining it, but it has to me a lot of possibilities. And sometimes, yes, concrete as form. And the show, I have a show up right now. There's a piece that's sort of like this piece, the column, concrete column with a photograph embedded into it.
Okay.
Where it's, the concrete becomes that form and becomes that geometric form. And then how's that fighting against the photograph, or kind of embalming it or preserving it at the same time?
Would you consider a sculpture a photograph?
Both. So in the gallery, there's a piece that's about, really this is like a small version of that, is 9 feet tall.
A 9 foot tall column?
Yes.
With the, wow.
The column is 8 foot and the photograph is 9 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I printed the photograph in like one in the dark room.
That's
so
impressive.
It weighs a lot. And I had to build it with like a, you know, steel base inside and so it would not fall. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of practical problems with making things that are big. They're that big and heavy. So.
Surprisingly, yeah. I mean, to think it was only scaled up 3 times, but man, it took me. That's the crate I had to transport it in. Yeah, and I poured it here, and I set up a whole scaffold and poured it. I had to pour it in one setting, but I had to make a, you know, it took time. But like sort of, you know, working on it here and there while I'm working on the whole rest of the work, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely entering a new realm of sculpture and photography combination that I haven't seen before, so.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean,
interesting.
It keeps me interested, so that's good. I mean, a lot of what I do in my studio is also very, like, experimental, you know. We have a whole pile of tests underneath that table of just trial and error, and it's very hands-on, so.
Mm.
I mean, I think that was actually another reason why I decided to go back into the dark room, is I wanted a studio practice, and some of these other projects, like the drywall pieces or earlier works, you know, you have the idea, and then you make them. But I wanted like to have a studio practice, really, where I like come, you know, I'm gonna be like a painter. We go there every day, and that's what you do. So,
mm-hmm.
To me, having lots of materials to play with and make mistakes and tests and all that stuff, like, mm-hmm. keeps it interesting, and then ideas come out of that.
Do you do a lot of sketching, or is it more just like 3-dimensionally working things out, and then like making a 3D mock-up, and then.
It sort of depends. I mean, I have, like, sketchbooks, and I do, like, draw... I mean, I do drawings, but, and a lot of, like, you know, figuring out stuff. But then I also have, like, little... I also print, like, little versions of things. How they fold, or...
Mm-hmm.
Printouts of small versions. But I definitely do a lot of small versions of things before I do larger versions of them.
Mm-hmm.
To figure out, like, but I kind of need to do them in real life, ultimately.
Yeah, like the wall piece, I guess. Like you said, you can't really know totally how it's going to be until you just make the thing. But
right.
You can try to practice and get a sense of it.
Yeah, like the piece I did at Vox, I did a test version where I cut out the circle. Then I realized the shape wasn't quite right. I had a piece of drywall. I cut it out. I put it in front of my window to kind of look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that all kind of figured out, and. You know, but the piece at Bemis, I made a model of it. I just had to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes they're model to this, or this piece where I kind of, there's a smaller version than this, which was the first version, so this is the second version.
Mm.
And then the third version is in a gallery. Where I just go supersize.
Yeah.
But in that case, I just have to kind of go for it, and I can't, like, you know, it's a little bit risky. I mean,
yeah.
That's it. Like, you invest all that time and, I mean, that's the thing. Some of the pieces, like, I will do several versions, and it just won't work out. But then I'll do another piece, and I do it once, and it's great. So,
nice.
If you have a lot of things happening, hopefully one of those, you know, sometimes serendipitous moments happen. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
you have to kind of work out it.
Uh-huh.
But
Well, sounds good. I've got a pretty good grasp on what you're doing, and be interested to see what you produce in the future in this vein. So,
well,
thanks for talking to me today.
Yeah.
And we'll see you around.
Thank you.
And that concludes this episode of Studio Sessions with our guest Letha Wilson. You can find her work online at lethaprojects.com. You can also learn more about me at my website, mattkuhlman.com. If you'd like to support this program, you can send a donation through PayPal to studiosessionspodcast@gmail.com. Even if you only send $1, your donation helps guarantee that I can continue providing interviews with interesting artists for your listening pleasure. And of course, don't forget to visit bigredandshiny.com for future episodes, along with other high-quality arts and culture content. Thank you for listening, and see you next time on Studio Sessions. ¶¶